live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration.
Historically speaking, the markets have performed better when there is divided government.
The biggest pressure for fiscal stimulus is an uptick in cases.
Bloomberg Sound On. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country. State governments control elections. That's in the Constitution.
I think that we can expect a smooth, thoughtful, methodical transition.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Brexit negotiators reached outline of an historic trade agreement. Meanwhile, Governor Cuomo extending an eviction ban and 1 million U.S. shots added into what folks are able to get for Americans getting the vaccine. And House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy told fellow Republicans that Speaker Pelosi's attempt to pass a bill boosting stimulus payments will fail, according to a person familiar with the conversation. We have a lot to get through, plus President Trump's latest comments regarding the Defense Authorization Act. We begin tonight with the big story. President Trump vetoes the key defense bill, calling it a gift to China. John Harney and Roxana Tyron report on the Bloomberg Terminal. President Donald Trump on Wednesday vetoed the $740.5 billion U.S. defense policy bill after Congress refused to include language that would abolish liability protections for technology companies, including Facebook and Twitter. Unfortunately, the act fails to include critical national security measures, includes provisions that fail to respect our veterans and our military's history, and contradicts efforts by my administration to put America first in our national security and foreign policy actions, the president said in a statement. Roxana Tyron joins us. She is Bloomberg's government senior reporter covering Congress and national security. Roxana, thank you so much for joining us. Do you think that the votes are there to overturn the veto?
Thanks for having me, Kevin. Yes, I think that President Trump is setting himself up for the first veto override of his presidency, just as he's out the door. Both the House and the Senate passed the annual defense authorization bill with a veto-proof majority. However, some of these votes might peel off. Republican leader in the House, Kevin McCarthy, said he's going to vote to sustain the veto. So they're going to lose a few votes there. But overall, the going reasoning is that both the House and the Senate will have enough votes to override the presidential veto.
I want to play for you sound on what President Trump had to say last year on December 20th, 2019, when he was welcomed with fanfare at Joint Base Andrews. And he told the crowd at the time of military members that he was keeping his promise to expand the military. Take a listen to the president last year.
In just a few minutes, I will proudly sign into law the largest ever investment in the United States military. In fact, I could say the largest ever by far.
What a difference 1 year can make, Roxana. What changed?
I think what changed is the fact that both the House and the GOP-led Senate refused to include the repeal of Section 230. And I don't think we can understate that. I think he really wanted to see the repeal signed into law. It's something that he has pushed for, and the Republicans, Democrats also think it should be overhauled. But he has pushed for this for a very long time. And obviously, he's very upset with Twitter and Facebook and so on. And so I think he's vetoing this measure over an unrelated measure. He's also very displeased about a provision in the bill that would require the renaming of military bases that honor Confederate generals. He has made a big point about this. He didn't want those bases to change their names, and obviously he's putting a lot of the Republican lawmakers in a bind with this veto over the Confederate named bases.
In terms of the timetable, when will the vote be in the Senate to override this veto? Two-thirds needed, of course.
Yes. So the House has already set the day for the 28th, which is Monday. If the House overrides the veto, then the Senate will come in on the 29th. It is unclear whether the Senate will be able to have the final override vote on the 29th, because, as you know, they have to go through a lot of legislative process. And people like Rand Paul and others might insist on going through the rigors, which means that the final override vote could come just hours before Congress switches over on January 3rd.
Meanwhile, just to add some context to this, the president, as Roxana just outlined, wants to eliminate Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This is the Section 230 that we've interviewed Senator Marsha Blackburn, the Republican from Tennessee, about, and it protects technology companies from liability for most content published by their users. The president has repeatedly tweeted veto warnings if Congress did not make that part of the annual legislation. Okay, so again, breaking news this afternoon, the president has vetoed the defense authorization bill, setting up a major showdown with Congress as the clock ticks down into the new Congress. Now let's switch gears and get to the other developing story, which is the president's decision not to sign, or weighing not signing, the $900 billion economic stimulus bill. We've got sounds on the president's comments from last evening, in which he tweeted out the following statement.
I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me, and we will get it done.
He also had this to say.
Congress found plenty of money for foreign countries, lobbyists, and special interests while sending the bare minimum to the American people who need it. It wasn't their fault. It was China's fault, not their fault.
What has the Republican reaction been, Roxana, on Capitol Hill to the president's decision to increase stimulus checks? Is that something that Republicans can get on board for?
It doesn't seem likely. Our colleagues Billy House and Laura Davidson just reported that on a conference call with the Republican caucus, Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, has said that they won't support a unanimous consent tomorrow to proceed with a bill that would increase those checks to $2,000.
And so what does that mean for folks just tuning in, and in terms of the unanimous consent procedures? Obviously, this is a procedural a streamline that would make it faster for Speaker Pelosi to bring this to a vote. But is the minority leader, in going against President Trump, he must feel that he has nothing to lose?
It's very likely. I think he fears his own caucus more than President Trump. It was really hard to convince them to go with even the $600 checks. So he's just not going to play into Pelosi's act here, or attempt to increase that number. And we haven't heard much from Senate Republicans. Lindsey Graham last night tweeted, who's an ally of President Trump, of course, tweeted that they should be doing the $2,000 checks. But he's one of the few voices that we have seen coming out of the Senate. And, of course, he had said that they should attach the repeal of Section 230 to legislation as well, to COVID relief legislation as well.
What has Senate Majority Leader McConnell said? Last question for you.
We have not seen anything out of McConnell. He's
been quiet, as far as
I can tell.
Remarkable today that McConnell's political orbit incredibly tight-lipped as these late developing and the clock ticks down in terms of strategy. Again, President Trump deciding to veto the defense authorization bill. As we just heard, it will set up a dramatic showdown after Christmas as the clock strikes down to a transfer in a new Congress. And of course, no one knows what will happen with that $900 billion economic stimulus bill. Great reporting, Roxana. Thank you so much for joining us. Roxana Tyron, Bloomberg Government senior reporter covering Congress and national security. No better colleague to have on the program to kick things off on such a nuanced, important news day than Roxana. Coming up next, we're going to check in on the NDAA veto, as well as continue to monitor how the markets have reacted. The stock's looking to snap a three-day losing run. This is the pound gains fresh off of those Brexit negotiations. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Nikki Schwab, Al Weaver, and Tammy Haddad join me in the next hour. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Look up. Look up at the sky. We have been getting some incredibly beautiful sunsets around this time of year the past couple of days. And I'm staring out at our Bloomberg headquarters, Washington Bureau, out the window, and we see the reflection. I'm telling you, folks, the sky this week, just really, really awesome to see the sunset and the different color palette up there in the clouds. Just amazing. Our executive producer of the Sound On Bloomberg Radio family, Christine Baratta, giving us a tweet in the break. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, top Democrat, Intelligence Committee, tweets, quote, "I look forward to overriding this ridiculous attempt to undermine our national security." He, of course, is tweeting in relation to President Trump's decision to veto the defense authorization bill. We are continuing to monitor that ongoing story and will bring you the latest reaction and comments as it happens. There was another situation that occurred across the pond, as they say, as the UK and EU are set to seal Brexit trade deal after a compromise on fish. Britain and the European Union look to set to see the Britain and the European Union look set to seal an historic post-Brexit trade accord in time for Christmas after negotiators reached the outline of a deal that includes a compromise on fishing rights. The negotiating teams were still working late Wednesday to finalize the wording of the agreement, which will formally complete Britain's separation from the bloc almost 5 years after the 2016 referendum. I mention this because the markets, of course, were moving off of this news. U.S. stocks rose for the first time in 4 days as investors looked past President Trump's demand for changes to pandemic relief legislation, and the pound gained as an outline of the post-Brexit trade deal was reached. The S&P 500 was led higher by the energy and financial sectors, while real estate and technology shares underperformed. The NASDAQ Composite and Russell 2000 indexes set record highs. Joining us now to break down what happened in the States, what happened in the UK, is Elena Papina, Bloomberg Markets reporter. All right, Elena, what drove the markets today, the UK or the US?
Hey, Kevin. It's mostly the U.S. We got a slew of economic data in the first part of the session. The data was mixed. You know, traders couldn't wrap their minds around the data. So they decided to just look past any kind of data. Today, they decided to look past the headlines. They focused on the positives. They focused on the fact that we do have a stimulus package. There are a lot of concerns and questions around them, but we do have it. It's, you know, this holiday shortened week before Christmas, and, you know, there was just this desire to push the markets higher. But we finished, the S&P 500 finished the day slightly higher, about 0.1% in the green, but that's still near 0.5% from its record high. So we are finishing the year and the month on a very positive note, and that's what investors wanted to focus on today.
You know, I thought my friend, my mentor, my colleague Tom Keene on Bloomberg Surveillance really captured this morning on Bloomberg Surveillance, and the conversation continuing on the simulcast of Bloomberg Television and Radio, and the conversation on radio, as Tom always points out, in that the markets really didn't budge off of the unpredictability of the president's comments, decisions, the veto with regards to the defense authorization bill, the threat not to sign the economic stimulus. Why not, Elena Papina?
Yeah, So that's a great point, Kevin. You know, a lot of defense companies, a few, you know, gun-related companies did move a little bit on that headline. But when we look at the S&P 500, you know, all across the universe, there was not a ton of, you know, a ton of reaction to that. That's because investors right now are turning their attention to what's going to happen in 3 weeks, and that's the fourth quarter earnings season. And for that fourth quarter earnings season, expectations are off the charts. You know, there is a really high number for earnings growth, for revenue growth. There is a lot of optimism about growth being all across the board, across all 11 industry groups in the S&P 500. So that is something that investors are looking at. They do understand that there's going to be a lot of give and take around the stimulus package and the defense bill. But as of right now, they are looking at the hard numbers, the hard numbers of top line and bottom up growth, and they do like these numbers a lot.
So why do you think that is, though? I mean, because they're still assuming, the market assumption is that lawmakers will get to some type of an arrangement on the stimulus, regardless of what the back and forth is. And I got to be honest, we're out of the fourth quarter. We're in overtime. We are definitely in overtime now, folks, for the $900 billion stimulus to get across the finish line. But the markets really are not blinking, because they still feel, Elena Popina, that there's going to be that some type of stimulus that is signed into law.
Yes, absolutely. They do pin a lot of hopes on that, because let's be honest, if we look at the economic data, the economic momentum started to wane towards the end of this year, just because the money from the previous stimulus packages, you know, dried up. But there is still this really, you know, a lot of folks are telling me this, a lot of investors, a lot of, you know, asset managers are telling me that they do expect that the base case scenario, if we don't get the stimulus, if something goes wrong, that's going to be the precedent for a correction of 5 or 10%, even that big. So they do pin a lot of hopes on the stimulus, and they do try to focus on the positives right now. My explanation is, hey, we had a crazy year. They just got tired of all the back and forth. They just want to hope everything's going to work out fine. And if not, they're going to worry about this into 2021. In January, in the first week of January, that's a historically a very weak for U.S. stocks. That's where some of the sell-off historically takes place. What we're going through right now is what, you know, people are calling the Santa rally, right? So that's
the wait, kids, are you hearing this? It's called the Santa rally. Listen up, it's everywhere. Go ahead, Elena Popina.
Everywhere, exactly. So historically, if you look at the past 50 years of the S&P 500's performance, December and the past 2 weeks of December have historically been some of the strongest periods of time for the S&P and the Dow. So that we have this, we have history and seasonality on our side. We have the vaccine on our side. We have the stimulus bill on our side. So we have a lot of factors that are supporting this rally. And mind you, you know, the S&P isn't up a ton for December. It rallied like crazy last month when, you know, small caps rallied to an all-time high. You know, NASDAQ, everyone was up a lot. This month, it's more of a, you know, it's a slow grind higher. It's not going off the charts. So that is understandable when you look at the factors that investors are looking at. Yes, there is a lot of concern about the bill and the veto, the defense bill veto, but, you know, investors try to look at this as the glass half full.
Elena Popina, just in the less than a minute that I have left with you, you have a great story out on the terminal with our colleague Andre Tartar. Headlined, "Hardly Anyone Is Actually Inside Wall Street's Big Office Towers. A study of mobile phones found foot traffic inside New York City's financial districts declining after steady rise during the summer." Elena, when do you think that foot traffic will come back to life?
Not until what people are telling me, and I've talked to a lot of folks on this story, you know, people are telling me it's not until the beginning of summer or the final, you know, 2-3 weeks of summer. So there's going to be this, you know, this decline in foot traffic into March, and things may start to look up a little bit into April and May. But you know what? A lot of that hinges on the vaccine. A lot of that is dependent on what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 weeks or months. So we're going to hope for the better, obviously.
All right, Elena Papina, Bloomberg Markets reporter. Thanks for breaking all of that down. Great reporting. And of course, thanks for keeping our eye on that list that we're all checking twice. I'm trying, folks. The Santa Claus rally. I just wanted to end with the Santa rally. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent. Much more coming up on that and the Santa rally. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
Live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration.
Historically speaking, the markets have performed better when there is divided government.
The biggest pressure for fiscal stimulus is an uptick in cases.
Bloomberg, sound off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country. State governments control elections. That's in the Constitution.
I think that we can expect a smooth, thoughtful, methodical transition.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
President Trump vetoes the defense authorization bill. Lawmakers say they have the votes to override it. Meanwhile, the reaction, the fallout, and spinning it forward on the economic stimulus. President Trump says the $600 checks are nowhere near enough. All of that, plus Andrew Yang files to run for New York City mayor. We're going to check in on the restaurants closing in the city for outdoor dining with the co-owner, co-founder of Bench Chili Bowl, Virginia Ali. And what's next for the media in the post-Trump era? Tammy Haddad joins us as well. Lots to get through. We begin tonight with the big story. President Trump saying he is vetoing the defense authorization bill because it does not do enough to repeal Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This, of course, has been a policy position that the president, as well as some Republicans like Senator Marsha Blackburn, a Republican of Tennessee, have been advocating for with regards to reining in big tech. Nikki Schwab joins us, senior U.S. political reporter at the Daily Mail, and Al Weaver, national political reporter at The Hill. Nikki, what has the reaction been in terms of Republicans and Democrats being able to override the president's veto?
I mean, if you're looking at the votes, Kevin, it seems like they will be able to actually override this veto. And also, this was expected. I think everyone was sort of, you know, shaken up last night when we heard that Trump might also veto the big sort of COVID stimulus bill. And that, you know, obviously was kind of a shock. But this one, we've known for basically months that he was going to veto and that the votes existed for him to, or for Congress to override it. The one lawmaker that I've seen who's actually suggested that they sort of go ahead and do Trump's bidding on Section 230 has been Lindsey Graham. And when you actually look at the vote count, he didn't even vote for the package to begin with. So they don't need him to be a yes vote going forward when they override this veto in the next couple of days.
All right, well, take a listen to what President Trump had to say about the defense authorization bill a year ago. My, what difference a year can make. The president was welcomed with fanfare on December 20th in 2019 at Joint Base Andrews. He told the crowd of military members that he was keeping his promise to expand the military. We've got sound on that.
In just a few minutes, I will proudly sign into law the largest ever investment in the United States military. In fact, I could say the largest ever by far.
Al Weaver, what happened?
Well, a lot's happened over that last year. And I think one of the big things, obviously, is his spat with the tech companies. That's really been it's an unrelated fight in the NDAA, but something that he's brought to the forefront for months now. I mean, you look back, I think the hallmark moment this whole time has been, I think it was probably June when Twitter started tagging his tweets with stuff. And some of these other tech companies started coming out and doing X, Y, and Z that really, really drove a stake into what he into the president's feelings. That's really been the main player in this NDAA fight has been this tech thing, and it's something he can't get over. It's something lawmakers don't quite they understand it, but they think it's completely unrelated to the current battle right now, and it is unrelated. Worth adding, but that's where we're at this point. It was not unexpected. We all saw it coming. We all see next week that the Senate and the House are likely going to override this. But that's not for, you know, the amazing thing is that's not even the biggest veto fight we have these days. It's kind of remarkable.
And we're going to get to that in a second. But this bill, the Defense Authorization Bill, would authorize $732 billion in discretionary spending for national defense, including a $69 billion for overseas contingency operations. It also authorizes funding for 93 F-35 fighter jets built by Lockheed Martin after the Trump administration requested 79. It also would back funding for the construction of two Virginia-class submarines a year after the administration originally requested funding for only one to free up money for nuclear deterrence. And it provides contract authority for as many as two nuclear Columbia-class submarines made by General Dynamics. I take your words, Nikki and Al, in terms of the president had forecasted this, but even so, doing so with so little time left on the calendar and on the clock is no doubt throwing a wrench into leadership on both sides of the aisle's plan. Senator Inhofe said, quote, "In voting against it, you have to stop and think about those kids that are out there in harm's way and the threats that they are facing on a regular basis." He's made those remarks on the Senate floor. "This is a serious thing that's out there, and I can't imagine wanting to have to face these people in the field in harm's way and say, well, we didn't pass a defense authorization bill." We should also note that Senator Mark Warner, a Virginia Democrat and the vice chairman of the Intelligence Committee, tweeting out that he looks forward to overriding this particular veto. So as it stands again, folks, we've heard even from Republicans on this program earlier this week and last week who have said that they do believe the votes are there to override the president's veto. But the timing of which, especially with the $900 billion economic stimulus happening, means that the countdown clock is going to expire if they don't run and manage this clock correctly. Now let's begin, or rather continue, with the other major story, which is on the economic stimulus. And we've got sound on President Trump's decision last night to release a statement saying that he is not satisfied with that $900 billion economic stimulus.
"I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package. And maybe that administration will be me, and we will get it done."
He also said that he had other issues with regards to the bill.
"Congress found plenty of money for foreign countries, lobbyists, and special interests while sending the bare minimum to the American people who need it. It wasn't their fault. It was China's fault, not their fault."
Nikki Schwab, senior U.S. political reporter at the Daily Mail. What has the reaction been from Republicans and allies of the president's in terms of increasing the stimulus checks?
So the latest on this, Kevin, is the fact that Kevin McCarthy, the head of the Republicans on the House side, isn't going to budge, isn't going to do it. So House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that, you know, she wanted the Democrats to basically, you know, by unanimous consent, up the checks from $600, which obviously Trump complained about, to $2,000, which is the amount that he sort of requested in this sort of surprise video last night. And the Republican side isn't going to bite. So right now, McCarthy's looking like he's going to be sort of the Grinch who stole Christmas.
Al Weaver, what have you been hearing from your Republican sources?
That there's a whole lot of unknowns at this point, that nobody knows what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. You know, last night really threw a wrench into the plans for everybody in the next couple of days, next couple of weeks. I know you guys have worked on this too, but I've been reporting on this thing since June, since May, when the House Democrats passed the CARES Act, or the Heroes Act. I got to get them all sorted. But they've been working on this for months, and last couple of months has really been pulling teeth on this, and they finally come through and they work out a deal, especially in the last 2 weeks. And for the president to come in and kind of blow this up is really, it's something people didn't totally expect, even though you can never, you always have to expect the unexpected here. But it's really thrown a wrench into things. People don't know where this is going to go from here. Nikki just kind of mentioned that the House Republicans are trying to figure out this UC request and how to work through that. But right now it seems like a staring match, and it depends on who's going to budge an inch.
All right. We're going to have much more on the timetable of that coming up next. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. That is Willie Nelson covering Frank Sinatra, one of my favorites. And in fact, Willie Nelson gave an interview the other day to Slate Magazine, and he said his biggest career regrets, get this, was that Sinatra, after they played a show together in Vegas, asked him to go out after the show. And he couldn't because he had to do another show and he had to get back on the tour bus. And he said that he deeply regrets. Here it is. Quote, my biggest regret is we played a show together and he asked me to hang out with him a while that night and I couldn't. I had some place to go and get on the bus, but that was one of my biggest regrets that I didn't get to hang out with Frank. You and me both, Willie. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. A special, special congratulations to the Sound On family. Matt Shirley, one of our producers here, got to meet his niece yesterday. Baby niece, born just a couple of weeks ago, Eleanor Shirley Gillespie. Happy congratulations, Uncle Bubs. And now we're going to pivot back to policy and politics. Nikki Schwab's with me, senior U.S. political reporter at the Daily Mail. Al Weaver, national political reporter at The Hill. I want to talk about the timetable, Al Weaver, in terms of when specifically lawmakers have to address the $900 billion economic stimulus bill and get really wonky and procedural with us of when we can expect this to get on the president's desk or a path forward where they increase the $600 checks.
Oh, man. Well, that's – yes. Let me see what we can do here. Okay. So we got about a week here before a couple days – or the early next week is when – early next week is when the CR would expire. They had a week-long CR to give the time for this bill to settle in and things to go to go into effect, really. Obviously, we're waiting on the president. He can decide not to sign this thing and just kind of wait it out through the end of the year, and then everything would turn over into the 117th Congress on January 3rd at noon. So it's all kind of wait and see on what the president does at this point. You know, the House could come back and the Senate could come back, and you see some sort of $2,000 check thing that the president wants. Or that, you know, but you have also that Republicans, they don't want a bill that's much more expensive than the $900 billion they want. That's why the $600 checks are what they are, because Republicans didn't want more. So that's the problem they're facing right now. It's kind of a catch-22. It's really up to the president at this point and to see who kind of bites first in the House.
So Chad Pergram over at Fox News, a legendary reporter, Fox News reporter Chad Pergram, explained on Twitter that the president did not outright say that he will veto the coronavirus government spending bill, but he very well could prevent it from being law via a pocket veto. Pocket vetoes are very rare, and Congress has to be in the proper parliamentary posture for this possibility to be in play, but we could very well be in those circumstances now. If you dust off your Constitution, Article 1, Section 7, the president has 10 days to either sign or veto a bill. But this is where a pocket veto comes into play. The latest and current congressional session can end is 11:59:59 a.m. on January 3rd. That is the drop-dead time for the 116th Congress, Nikki Schwab. So the president could veto a bill by keeping it in his pocket and not signing it if it becomes too close to a congressional adjournment, in which case, Nikki, what would happen?
So in that case, we would have to basically, both houses of Congress would have to repass this bill after the new Congress is sworn in. And then I guess in this scenario, if Trump again doesn't move on it, we're getting up to I think sort of the idea is if it ends up going into the new Congress, that Biden would then, once he takes office, would then have to sign the bill and get it going. But, you know, the one thing I read Chad Pergram's thing, too, sort of another big question mark is sort of like what happens in those sort of 17 days between the new Congress coming in and also Trump going out, right?
Precisely. And we're at uncharted territory. And I got to tell you, folks, Nikki Schwab of U.S. Political reporter at the Daily Mail, Al Weaver, national political reporter at The Hill. I mean, I've kind of come up with both of them over the last decade, and they are right there with me in the, well, pre-COVID, of course, in the gaggles and in the hallways of Congress, asking these lawmakers questions, talking to legislative aides, talking to the LDs and whatnot. And a pocket veto is something that was like an extra credit question on like Mr. Jessen's history class in seventh grade at Strathaven Middle School when I was growing up in Delco. So the pocket veto is something that is stumping all of us right now. And what she just pointed out, Al, and Nikki Schwab just pointed out, of the time frame lapse between a new Congress coming in and the president still having like 2 weeks left in office is uncharted territory. But the markets are, I'm telling you this, and talking with my colleagues, Tom Keene, Lisa Abramowitz this morning, and talking with Elena Popina, our Bloomberg Markets reporter in the last half hour, they are insisting that they are going to get stimulus. It's baked into the markets. Is the president, based upon your reporting, Al, willing to really inject this much volatility into the markets with something like a pocket veto, even if the public's on his side, Republicans and AOC, or his base Republicans, for $2,000 checks?
Well, it's a couple of things. I think the one of the things that's worth mentioning is it's not just COVID relief, is it's a government spending bill, and that the government could shut down. Literally, he could just shut down the government if he doesn't get his way on this whole thing. And that's really the other big fear of this. So it's almost more that, that's what people I talked to on the Hill, that they're more worried about the omnibus than they are the coronavirus relief package. They're saying, you know, this was $1.4 trillion. They're basically saying to me, he better not veto this. Even though it sounds he's obviously upset about this. This is something the Freedom Caucus folks have talked to and conservatives have talked to for years and begged him not to sign. So he's kind of burrowing back into the hole that he gets into on occasion. So, you know, it's a whole game. Yeah. It's all about the unknowns at this point. And that's what everyone's pointing to who I talk to.
Pocket veto precludes parliamentary posture post-haste. And so clearly, folks, we are in uncharted territories. It's going to be remarkable. But again, as we get these developments, we will continue to bring them as they happen. My thanks to Nikki Schwab, senior U.S. political reporter at the Daily Mail, and Al Weaver, national political reporter at The Hill. Happy holidays to you and your families. Coming up next, we check in with the legendary, iconic Virginia Ali of Ben's Chili Bowl. She's going to help us navigate through the closures that are happening in Washington, D.C. with the no more indoor dining for a couple of weeks. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1. Hold my hand. A long December. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Washington, D.C. set to re-enter phase two of the coronavirus restrictions tomorrow, and indoor dining will be closed for a couple of weeks as Mayor Muriel Bowser has decided that that is the best course of action to take. Meanwhile, the mayor has decided that tomorrow, she has proclaimed, is Dr. Fauci Day in Washington, D.C. You know, it's frustrating, folks. I hear it from folks all across town, Republicans, Democrats, people who don't really follow national politics, but they're frustrated. They've got pandemic fatigue from the business perspective, from the health perspective. They've had to realter their lives, kids not being able to go to school, the virtual learning. And I hear you. I hear you. I understand it. And I thought, you know, we've got a couple of Sound On off days tomorrow and, of course, on Christmas. And I thought I needed to hear from someone esteemed in our community, someone who really is, I believe, representative of what the real district stands for. And that, of course, is Mrs. Virginia Ali. And I have to say, Mrs. Ali, welcome back to the program, the co-founder, co-owner of Ben's Chili Bowl, the landmark institution that, of course, is the original, the OG on U Street. But I got to say, congratulations. You had a birthday recently, last week. And I told Vita Ali to wish you a happy birthday before inviting you back on the program. And happy 87th birthday. You do not look it. And I got to say, how did you celebrate your birthday?
Well, because of the pandemic, I celebrated it in the back room of the Chili Bowl with Jeff's family. It's the quietest birthday I've had in quite a long time.
All right.
But that was because of the pandemic. We're trying to be safe and do the right thing and observe the safety precautions, and that's exactly what we did. I had a delicious cake from New York, I believe it's in Brooklyn. I'm not sure, but it's called Cake Man Raven that specializes in red velvet cake. And that was sent down here to me in Washington, D.C., which he's done for many years. So New York is very close to us as well.
So, Mrs. Ali, I got to be candid. People are tired. They're frustrated. The small businesses, the restaurant community, they're frustrated that they've got to return to no indoor dining for a couple of weeks. I mean, how are you as a business owner navigating through that? And what do you hear from the local business community about Mayor Bowser's decision?
Well, the thing is, we're just trying to be safe. We want this thing to be over. In my 62 and a half years of being here in business, this has been the most challenging thing I've ever experienced. And I've experienced a lot, believe me. But this is so challenging because it does create illnesses and death. And for that reason, I think we try to be as compassionate and as law-abiding as we can. It's sometimes people don't really want to recognize 6 feet apart and wearing their mask. Of course you can't eat with the mask on, but when you divide your dining room in half, you don't accommodate very many people, really, or certainly not the kind of sales that you're accustomed to. But the biggest thing is to really try to get this thing over with, and I think that's what Mayor Bowser is trying to do. More than a 14-day period, if we could just keep everybody away from each other and have them wear their masks, perhaps that will bring the surge down and help us to get onto the road of recovery.
Is Ben still going to be doing?
Let me tell you, it's really hard because, the hours we had, we used to open at 6 a.m. in the morning and close at 3 a.m. and 4 on weekends. But that isn't the case anymore.
Are you guys going to be doing, are you going to remain open in terms of the window for outdoor dining or no?
We do have two tents. And even that is considered indoor dining unless you remove a flap. But that's very difficult because it's December and January. It's cold.
It's very cold.
How warm can you get it out there? So it's very hard. It's really very difficult. But we try to understand the reasoning behind it. And it's quite a sacrifice. And some of us will not be able to hold on. We have so many businesses and restaurants in particular in our area that is closed already. So
what are you hearing about how long this ordinance is going to last, and are you satisfied with the mayor's office's communication?
Yes, I think we have a good mayor that's doing her very best, and I feel like I'm aware of what's going on. I simply listen to the news and read the newspaper. And I feel like that, she lets us know in advance. We've known now for a little while that this closure was going to take place today, and it would be in effect until the 15th of January, I believe.
Yeah.
So I think that's well known throughout the city.
Virginia Ali's with us, and she is, of course, the co-owner, co-founder of Ben's Chili Bowl. She's been incredibly gracious enough to talk with us this evening on the eve of the final night for a couple of weeks when the city has to go back to no indoor dining. Virginia, what would you like Congress to pass in terms of financial assistance for the restaurant industry and the small business industry? What would be helpful for Republicans and Democrats to pass to help businesses like Ben's Chili Bowl?
Well, the PP program has been helpful because it helps us to hold on to staff, although sometimes we've had difficulties early on with that because the staff are young people with young families. So you've got a couple of children, and you're afraid to expose your children. You're afraid to expose your children, and that so they, many of them don't want to work for that reason. And, of course, they're being paid fairly well.
Yeah.
They're being paid fairly well to stay home. But you can understand some have parents or grandparents in the home, and many, as I said, have children. But the PP program did help us to hold on for the first few months. Now that's run out, and hopefully we'll get some help again, please, I'm hoping, so that we can continue to hold on.
Virginia
it's
Ali.
Very hard.
Virginia Ali, and this is a delicate question, but you know it's a conversation that I've been having with my folks back home outside of Philadelphia. As we head into the holiday season, I mean, so many people want to celebrate the holidays with their loved ones, with their parents who are elder, and they want to see them and they want to be able to be with them. But of course, we have to respect the virus. And so I just wanted to get from your perspective about how important it is that folks of all ages, all backgrounds, that we respect the virus, respect the social distancing measures, even though we have this thrill of hope with the vaccine now in the marketplace. Dr. Fauci getting the vaccine, President-elect Biden getting the vaccine, Republicans, Democrats getting the vaccine, and of course, importantly, the frontline workers. But it's important to still respect these social distance guidelines, even this holiday season when we all so desperately want to come together and see everybody.
Well, I think we definitely have to respect those guidelines. But I firmly believe that if everyone wore a mask, it would make all the difference in the world. I really believe that. Now, when you're going into a home with family, you know, I had Thanksgiving dinner with my son and his wife and two children that were coming in from school. But they did have the COVID test prior to coming home, and I felt comfortable with it. But no one else was coming into the home. But I firmly believe that if you're wearing the mask whenever you're around people, that you're pretty well protected. And the distancing makes it even better. And, of course, continuously washing your hands. And if we could just follow that, that's not so very hard to do.
Virginia Ali, thank you so much, my friend, truly. Thank you for making some time for me tonight. It's always great to hear from you, my friend, and a happy, happy birthday. We'll celebrate next year, and we'll get even more cake. But now I want a chili. Now I want a bench chili bowl, like now. Maybe I'll go there after work. Anyway, thank you to Virginia Ali, the co-owner, co-founder of Bench Chili Bowl, and again, the mayor's order goes into effect tomorrow. Much more coming up next. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1. Can't remember the last thing that we let in light and we vanish it. And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television. And for Bloomberg Radio, I have to say that is one of my all-time favorite Christmas songs. My dad used to blast it in the car. That and the other one, the Bruce Springsteen, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And I mean, if you're not having fun right now in the moment, we made it through 2020 almost. We still have a couple days left. We did it, folks. And we couldn't have done it without you. So thank you for listening. I'm here at Bloomberg. We're all focused on what's next. And this part of the show, we've been rebranding with our esteemed executive producer, Christine Barata, and heading into 2021 about what we can do better, what we can expand, how we can grow, right? Everyone wants to do that, expand, grow, continue to elevate themselves. And we want to, at Bloomberg, we're all about what's next, so what's coming next. So instead of what's on our radar, we're talking now about this segment that we're going to retool, and we're going to call it What's Next. And I got to say, there's no one better to have this conversation with in terms of what's next for the media industry than the one and only Tammy Haddad of Haddad Media, the CEO of Haddad Media. She has worked with virtually every major television network, print imprints in Washington, D.C., as well as Fortune 20 companies and whatnot. Everyone knows Tam. Tammy, thank you so much, my friend, for joining us. What's next in the media?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, you know this sound.
Is that Santa's reindeers?
Thank you. How'd you know? They're just, you know.
Wait, where did you hear them?
They're right here. They're right over top of Palisades, beautiful downtown Palisades.
Oh my gosh, I gotta call my godson Peter. I gotta call Peter.
Peter, Santa's on the way.
I can't believe we just heard I can't believe it. I gotta text him. Well, all right, Tammy, what's next for media?
I can't really talk to you now. I've gotta talk about what's going on in media. You know, it's actually an interesting thing because the reemergence of local news, the reemergence of radio. You know, back when Jimmy Carter was president, every single day they called every radio station around the country because the Carter White House, before you and everyone listening was born, was based on radio and how you connect at a local level. And that's what's happening now. And Donald Trump has done that. You know, we have seen over the years, you know, President Clinton famously went over the heads of the, you know, network anchors and played saxophone on Arsenio Hall show. George Bush, he rolled oranges down his, you know, down the plane, the center of the plane with the press. You know, all these things happen. And I think that's really what we're going to see more of in 2021. So we have Twitter, right? We have social media. We now, by the way, have this government bill, even though it's been pushed aside for a few minutes here, that's going to go to local news, and people realize how important local news is going to be. The question is, though,
Kevin, especially with local news, I just got to interject here. We just heard from Virginia Ali, the co-founder, co-owner of Ben's Chili Bowl, especially with all of the different local rules because of COVID-19. I mean, people were really depending on local news on stations like Bloomberg 99.1 and others to really get their information on what's open, where they can go, where they can't, all of the different hours for all of the small businesses. All of that was local news driven. Go ahead, Tam.
I think that's right, because people see the immediate connection. They've got to tune in to know really what you're talking about, what's happening next. And it's all in play because we've got this pandemic, right? That's everything. And you don't know what each day brings. For example, in Washington, the next 3 weeks indoors is closed, right? So all the restaurants that you see on the streets that built out these various, I don't know, some of them
contraptions,
are
igloos.
Yeah, did you say igloos?
Igloos or sheds. Some of them are sheds.
Well,
let's be honest.
I was trying to think of a good word. Yeah, sheds is exactly it. Anyway, they built all of these, and now what's happened is the city is saying you need to get those off the street. So if you're Cafe Milano, where I'm going to dinner tonight, you're on the sidewalk, so you're okay. But most of the restaurants have built right into the road, which has honestly saved them financially.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's funny because Arianna Huffington 10 years ago at AOL tried Patch. I think some of Patch still exists. The hyper-local site, right? But to your point, you know, people are, you know, this is why Facebook and all these other things work. Why do people go on Facebook and they believe that more than what they see their favorite TV anchor say, right? Because it's so neighborhoody, you know? So I think that's what we're going to have to watch that, Kevin, very closely, I think.
I think that's really smart, and I think it's really true, especially as folks are trying to get information. And I got to say, I love the hustle and the spirit of the restaurant industry. You know this, Tammy. My uncle has owned a hoagie shop outside of Philly for like 40-plus years. Yes, and so I admire the tenacity and the grit of people like Franco, who, of course, has appeared on this show from Cafe Milano, and the folks at Dog Tag and, of course, Ben's Chili Bowl as well. That said, there's this question that I get from listeners, from viewers, that they all want to know, and I never really know how to answer it. So I say, you got to talk to people like Tammy Haddad. So here's a question that I always get that I'm going to put to you, a media savvy expert and advisor. Can the media survive in the post-Trump era? Can the Washington media survive in the post-Trump era? Or will they be bored out of town?
Oh, well, so you're So you're asking a key question, not if other people are interested, but how will they make it interesting? And that is going to be the greatest challenge. I mean, look, at first, everyone, you know, feels like, well, you know, I can chill out a little, that it's not going to be drama every day. Although President Trump today reminded us why he's the best at all of this, because he just upended what all of these folks have been working on in Congress and, you know, all throughout Washington to get done and get some relief to the American people. But I think that this is the Trump challenge. Although, honestly, can you think of another politician on the horizon? Let's put President-elect Biden aside and, you know, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris aside, because we already know what they're going to do, Kevin.
I'll tell you.
We know they're going to keep it close to the vest.
Yep.
We know they're going to move carefully. We know they're going to push for cooperation amongst parties. That is not exciting.
Well, you know what? Did you see this?
If I had a nickel, right, for every time someone said, oh, Tammy, I want to talk to you, I want to produce a show, or I want to host a show called Common Ground, nobody wants to see that show. That's why it's not on TV. Am I right?
No, I don't. I think, you know what, actually, I think people are hungry for policy-driven news. I don't think people want to be told what to think. I don't think they want to be told what their opinions are. I think they want to have an aha moment. I think they want to go, oh, I didn't know that. And I think that there's an opportunity for that. And I think we do that here at Bloomberg. Let me ask you this. Andrew Yang is running for mayor of New York City. There's a dynamic politician, Tam.
There he is. Santa's on his side. I mean, actually, it's interesting, right, because he was one of the first candidates to say, you know, write a check for $1,000 to every, you know, every person. It'll be an interesting race. De Blasio is not in favor there. He has done a variety of things over many years that he, you know, bit the hand that fed him. Hillary Clinton was, you know, he was her protege, and then he went right after her. You know, so the city is not in a good place, pandemic aside. Then overlay the pandemic, and then overlay what's happening in business now, yeah. Right? And we're seeing, by the way, don't forget, what have we seen this past week? How many tech companies are moving to Texas? Meanwhile, right. Mike Bloomberg, when he was mayor, he got so many tech companies to come to New York. Will they also depart New York City? And what gift will Andrew Yang bring them? Because, by the way,
we gotta
what
did
go. He ever run, right? Like,
well, final question. Final yeah. question. And you got like 10 seconds. What's your favorite Christmas song?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I'd have to say Silent Night. I hate to be the old lady that I am. But I love Silent Night.
I like Oh Holy Night. That's my all-time favorite one. Tam, happy holidays, my friend. Thank you. I'm Kevin Cirilli. Happy holidays to you, too. Thanks for listening to Bloomberg 99.1.